Why is sight important? Why is it good to be able to see? It might sound like quite an obvious question. It might sound, but obviously sight is important. And I think today we can quite easily distinguish between spiritual sight and physical sight. So one's very important, one's less important, or maybe just think of them as very, very distinct concepts. And obviously it's very possible for someone to have no physical sight and lots of spiritual sight. Can you hear me now? Is that better? Perfect. And as the passage demonstrates as well, there were lots of people, the Pharisees in particular, who had lots of physical sight, but not much spiritual sight. But think about what it would have meant to be blind in first century Judea. It's a culture which distinguished far less between the spiritual and the material than we can today. You wouldn't have been able to do much of the work which was needed at a time when most people were working in agriculture. If you think about situations like the one Jesus describes in the parable of the labourers in the vineyard, the hirer would go out and get people based on their physical ability, so he'd get the most able first, and then he'd go for the people who were less able. It meant you were heavily reliant on others, a time before Braille or technological experience, any text-to-speech software, and it meant to rely on people's unreliable help, on pity, on begging. And presumably, it meant being passed by others with questions. Travelling teachers, Pharisees, curious children asking their parents the question, did his parents sin, or did he? What caused his blindness? Imagine the shame in that. Across the road, they're talking about you. I doubt it's the first time he heard people ask the question, when Jesus' disciples asked Jesus, what caused his blindness? But others would have answered with more conventional wisdom. If we read ahead a little to verse 34, we see that the Pharisees' worldview taught that a man born blind must have been steeped in sin from the start. He must have known, and maybe he'd internalised that opinion. That's what happens if you sin. Thank God he gave us sight, that we're not like this beggar. A reliance on the unreliable help of others, and an inability to do things on your own terms. An inability to be known and loved and accepted by your community. That sounds a lot like what would have happened to people who would have deemed not to have much spiritual sight in that community as well, how the Pharisees would have reacted to people who disagreed with them. It sounds like trying without the vision given us to God to work out what's happening in the world, what we should do, what's right and what's wrong. And so in this passage we see that when a man gains physical and spiritual sight, they are both important. Both play a key role in restoring him to his rightful place with God and with his community. But it is only if we have sight that we can access the light of the world. But how can the blind gain sight? Well, it happens a lot in this passage. And the first instance we see, I don't think it's with the blind man. It's right at the start, as we see that the disciples are still learning to see Jesus. They've learned that he's a teacher and that he gives wisdom, but they're forgetting that he's also the God who desires relationship and healing. And so when they see the man born blind, they don't see him as a man. They see a concept, a problem. Perhaps Jesus could enlighten them on this with his wisdom. Who sinned? Is it the man or his parents? What's going on behind the scenes? What's the theology behind why he was born blind? And so Jesus gives them sight. It's not that this man or his parents were particularly sinful. He's not blind because he's worse. This has happened so the works of God may be displayed in him. And so we must do these works while we can. Is that how we view the troubles in life? I think my prayers around struggles and difficulties and uncertainties often sound more like, God, just please get rid of it so I'll have an easy life. Not, God, may your works be displayed in this situation. But Jesus doesn't promise us an easy life, as we were saying earlier. He gives us opportunities to partner with him and to display his glory in our circumstances. So Jesus is very efficient here. He gives sight in two ways at once. He gives sight to the blind man, and in doing so, he gives this sort of hands-on education to his disciples. They see that to follow Jesus is not just to come to conclusions about where sin is from, but to step in, to make it right, to partner with God in giving sight to the blind. It's about a dynamic, trusting faith that gets us involved, not just standing back, making judgments. And so Jesus gets this mixture of mud and spit, puts it in his eyes, tells the blind man to wash, and the man sees, and others see him, and they have questions. And it's interesting, we haven't heard anything about the blind man's sort of replies, if he was responding to this, throughout all this passage so far. He's been sat there, they've been talking about him, they've been asking that question, did his parents sin, did he, why is he like this? But you hear Jesus saying, it's not his fault. It's not his parents' fault either. And suddenly the blind man hears Jesus next to him, and he hears him presumably making some sort of mixture of mud and spit. And suddenly he feels something in his eyes, and suddenly a voice is telling him to go and wash in the pool of Siloam. And so he does, and he sees. What does he say when he comes to the others, when he comes home? And what does he say to the ones who don't see him suddenly, when they insist it, he's a lookalike? He just says, I am the man, it's me. His social identity, the way he's been seen by others and the way he saw himself, has been totally changed. His whole life he would have been known as that blind guy, the beggar. And that's not him anymore. Jesus has given him sight, he's been changed, and they don't recognise the changed man. Something about the revelation of God both gives sight and blinds at the same time. Some see God, so others don't even recognise the man. But of course, the man born blind knows he's not a lookalike. He knows he's been made new. But the neighbours and the friends have two main questions. Is this the man who used to sit and beg? And where is Jesus, the one who you say healed him? And so they take him to the Pharisees. They want to find out what's happened. So they go to the elite, scrupulous, devout, religious leaders. How will he hold up to their questions? I wonder what he'd heard about the Pharisees before, if he'd interacted with them much. Maybe he believed what they said about his blindness being brought through his sin. Now he has to justify what has happened in front of their questions. So they start by asking what has happened, and the man born blind testifies accurately and honestly. He put mud in my eyes, and I washed, and now I see. And how do the Pharisees respond? Well, interestingly, they bring up the Sabbath. Some of them seem pretty convinced that a healing on the Sabbath disqualifies Jesus from being from God. And that's not based on any of the books in the Old Testament. That's based on what's in the Mishnah, which is a sort of collection of Jewish teachings, which are interpretations of what was in the Law of Moses. So it's a claim that came later. Keep that in mind, because we'll come back to it. But regardless of that, regardless of the Sabbath, whether Jesus went against their legalistic ideas of what God is, the claim still remains that this man was born blind, but now sees. And how could a sinner do that? Either he's lying, and this never happened, or he's telling the truth. So what does that leave Jesus as? And so this group of Pharisees, the religious and legal experts, they ask the man born blind his opinion. He's not the expert. He's not had time to sort of come up with a way of rationalising what's happened. He's not had an elite education, as far as we know. But he has met Jesus, and he's been healed by him. So he says, well, he must have something of God in him. Maybe he's a prophet. That's not the answer the Pharisees want to hear. So they need to find out, well, is he a trustworthy witness? Probably hoping the answer is no. So they send for his parents, and they ask them. And they start off pretty well. They say, we know he's our son, and we know he was blind, which is good. He's not some kind of lookalike. He really was healed. But they continue, but how we can see, how he can see now, or who opened his eyes, we do not know. Ask him. He is of age. He will speak for himself. Which must have been a little discouraging for the man born blind. His parents have refused to stand by his own testimony. His word must stand on its own. So again, the Pharisees turn back to him. And again, he tells the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. Whether he is a sinner or not, I do not know. One thing I do know, I was blind, and now I see. And again they ask, what did he do? Even though he's already told them about the mud and the spit and the washing and the pool. And he's growing in confidence because his testimony is true. In fact, he even gets a bit cheeky with them. Why do you want to hear it again? Do you want to become his disciples too? And suddenly the Pharisees are levying this barrage of insults and accusations at him. You are this fellow's disciple. We are disciples of Moses. Remember what we were saying earlier about the Sabbath and how Moses, you know, it's in the Ten Commandments that the Sabbath must be kept holy, but there's nothing in it about healing on the Sabbath. There's nothing that would say that'd be wrong. So they're implying that to follow Jesus is to reject Moses. But those teachings on the Sabbath didn't come from Moses, they came much later. They're not telling the truth. We know that God spoke to Moses, but as for this fellow Jesus, we don't know where he comes from. And I think this is where it all sort of starts to come together for the blind man. You must be thinking, well, you've heard my testimony already of how this man opened my eyes. You've rejected it. You've rejected the testimony. You admit yourself you don't know where he comes from. We can agree that God wouldn't listen to sinners, so he must be a godly man. No human action could have opened my eyes. If this man were not from God, he could do nothing. And the Pharisees don't know him. So what does that leave the Pharisees as? And that's when they throw him out. When I first started writing this, I was trying to think, how would he have been feeling at this time? I was thinking he must have been quite dejected. He's just been abandoned by his parents, by the Pharisees. But I'm not sure that's the case. Yes, they called him steeped in sin, but he's realised at this point they don't know anything about a man who came from God, who tells him that he's not a sinner. The Pharisees' words, their attacks, their accusations, they mean nothing. He had no reason to be condemned. And at this point, Jesus goes out, and Jesus finds him to encourage and reveal more to him. Jesus invites him into even deeper relationship with him through greater knowledge of Jesus' identity. Do you believe in the Son of Man? And compare his response to that of the Pharisees. He says, tell me so that I may believe in him. He's desiring God. He's eager to hear more. Tell me the truth. I'll respond with belief. And Jesus says, you have now seen him. You've been given sight. You're speaking with him. Then the man said, Lord, I believe. And he worshipped him. Jesus said, for judgment I have come into this world so that the blind will see, and those who see will become blind. And some Pharisees who were with him heard him say this and asked, what, are we blind too? Jesus said, if you were blind, you would not be guilty of sin. But now that you claim you can see, your guilt remains. If we come to Jesus to justify our own way of doing things, to claim that we are righteously following him by our own reasoning and our own power, we won't find him. If the doubts we have take the form of accusing God that he must not be God, we probably won't find him there either. But if we're honest about the works of God we see, and we respond to the presence of God in our life with desire for more, tell me more so I may believe, Jesus is more than happy to find us there. So let's not be like the disciples at the start, happy to sort of engage in debate from a distance, to be philosophers, but not willing to develop a more practical theology based on a relationship with others, doing God's will. Let's not be like the Pharisees, asking questions to get to the truth, only to reject what they find in favour of their own ideas. We can trust that God's way is better than ours. Instead, let's be like Jesus, to step in, full of the Spirit, to reveal God's truth, to find and stand with those who are rejected, to expose those who claim to have sight. And let us respond to him like the man born blind, to testify honestly. We don't have to have answers for every question. Thankfully, we have the Bible, so if people ask us some of the questions he has asked, like if Jesus was a sinner, we can answer no. So we do have a bit more knowledge than the man born blind. But whether you know it all, or you know barely any of the technical, theological workings of God, if you have met and responded to Jesus, you have a testimony based on your relationship with him. You can tell people all you know about him, and you can testify with the truth. I was blind, but now I see. I can say that Jesus has given me sight, to see him as he is, myself as I am, my friends and family, and the people I pass on the street as they are. I once was blind, but now I see. That's a rational testimony, based on experience, based on truth, and being in that place leads us to a greater relationship with God, an eagerness to hear more. And when we hear that, we can respond with worship. So let's do that. I'm going to invite the band back up and pray as they set up. God, thank you that your Son Jesus gives sight to the blind while revealing those who claim sight without him to be blind. Thank you that you're closer than we can imagine, that you give sight when we ask for it. We're sorry for any times when we have claimed to see by our own eyes or being blind to your vision. We remember again that you are King over all our lives, and seeing you as you see us is a greater, more loving, and more true way to see than by our own eyes. Please replace what we think we know about you with first-hand experience and faith and sight of your goodness. And may our faith be based on a real relationship with you in all things. Amen.